in the fourth chapter of Matthew, verse 23. It says, Jesus went about all Galilee, teaching in their synagogues, and preaching the gospel of the kingdom, and healing all manner of sickness and all manner of disease among the people. Now, the synagogue, you don't find the word in the Old Testament, because the synagogue developed during the period between the Old and the New Testament. It was, first of all, a place of worship. We don't quite want to use the word church, but it was that kind of thing. But it was also a school. There was great emphasis upon teaching. And the word literally means to lead together. You lead the people together for worship, and you lead the other groups together for instruction and teaching. And so the synagogue continued on after the coming of Jesus. And Jesus went to the synagogue and preached. And you have other stories about that in the other Gospels. And then as he went around Galilee, he healed the sick. And the 24th verse says that his fame went throughout all Syria to the north and the northeast. And they brought the sick and those who had different kinds of diseases, those possessed with evil spirits, those who were lunatic, I expect we'd say epileptic, and those that had palsy, and he healed them. Here's Christ's power as the healer. And multitudes followed him from Galilee, all around the Sea of Galilee, and from Decapolis. Decapolis literally means 10 cities. It's the region right east of the Sea of Galilee. And archaeologists have been digging there in recent years, Dr. Meyer in St. Louis and others. This would be in King Hussein's part of the country now. And so folks from all around the Sea of Galilee came, and from Jerusalem and Judea and from beyond Jordan. And from the expression beyond Jordan again means over in King Hussein's part of the country. Now, the fifth chapter says, seeing the multitudes, he went up into a mountain, and when he was set, his disciples came unto him, and he opened his mouth and taught them, saying, the Sermon on the Mount. Don't make a big thing of it. Do you notice that Jesus sat down to teach? I get the impression that there are some groups where that's still appropriate. I sit down for some classes now, not all of them, but Jesus wasn't sitting down because he was an old man now. He thought this was the proper way to teach. And he is talking especially to the disciples, the first verse of chapter 5. And he is going to pick up Psalm 1. You know, Psalm 1 says, blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful, and things like that. But Psalm 1 begins with the idea, here are the really blessed, the really happy folks. And Jesus picks that up and says, here's the way to be really happy. Of course, Jesus is going to be using a Greek word here, I think. There are folks think this was translated into Greek from Hebrew, and that wouldn't make any difference. But Jesus is using the word makarios, which means blessed or happy. The word that the Greeks used for Cyprus. They thought Cyprus was just the most wonderful place. You could have tropical fruit and still have the sea breezes and things like that. And Jesus says, now listen, here's real happiness. The exact opposite of the world's view of happiness. You know, the world says, blessed are the rich, blessed are the strong, blessed are the talented, blessed are the smart, blessed are the young folks, blessed are the Americans or whatnot. That wasn't what Jesus said. Now, some of these other things are good and very appropriate and all that. But Jesus begins by saying, here's real happiness. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are the humble-minded who understand about their need. The hymn book says, I need thee every hour. For nothing good have I whereby thy grace to claim. I wash my garments white in the blood of Calvary's Lamb. And the man who was praying, Lord, be merciful to me, a sinner. Here's what it means to be poor in spirit. To understand our need of God's salvation and things like that. And Jesus says, theirs is the kingdom of heaven. These folks that really understand are the folks that God is ready to help. Then he says, blessed are they that mourn, they shall be comforted. Now, again, this is not just crying in general. Jesus isn't saying, let's make everybody cry that we can. Oh, no, nothing like that. But blessed are those folks that mourn because of their sin and need, that can say, woe is me, I'm undone, and understand that. And Jesus said, they'll be comforted. These folks who can say, woe is me, I'm undone, when they're praying, these are the folks that God can comfort with salvation. Then he says, blessed are the meek, the humble again, or the gentle in spirit. They'll inherit the earth. Blessed are these folks who can be peaceable and gentle and humble, who have a Christian character. They'll inherit the earth. Sometimes they don't inherit a whole lot of it in this life, but there's a world to come. And sometimes, other things being equal, they'll inherit more of it in this life. Anyway, Jesus says, blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness. They'll be filled. To hunger and to thirst is to have strong desire. Now, this is Palestine. And it's a hot country. And these folks worked out in the field. In those days, they did much more physical work than farmers do now. And when you're out in the field, working with something like a hoe, and if you start 6-7 o'clock in the morning, by 11 o'clock, you'll be hungry. And you will have been thirsty a couple of times. And Jesus says, blessed are these folks who hunger and thirst after righteousness, God's righteousness. They'll be filled. You see, there's a thirst for this world that the Bible calls covetousness. And there is such a thing as having the strong desire for righteousness. And Jesus is still talking about what makes people really happy. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the folks who, like the Good Samaritan, can show kindness and mercy. You can only show mercy to the folks who can't demand. Back in the book of Micah, Micah 6, I think it is, there's the verse, what doth the Lord require of thee but to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with thy God? And here Jesus is saying, really happy are these merciful folks. Mercy is going to be shown to them. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Now, folks look at that and they say, oh, that means we're going to see God in heaven. Yes, that's probably the basic part of it. But let's not limit it to that. I think this means blessed are the pure in heart. They'll see God in the Bible, in His Word, in a very real way. And they'll see God in His creation, in the wonder of His creation, in the beauty of His creation. And then, of course, as a climax, they'll see God personally when they come into His presence. Blessed are the pure in heart. They are the folks that are going to see God. Blessed are the peacemakers. Oh, they shall be called the children of God. There are folks, you know, that just try to make peace. Sometimes they try to make peace between nations. Sometimes they try to make peace and do between individuals. Sometimes they make peace between God and man. They bring people to accept God's salvation and God's peace. And Jesus just says, happy, blessed, truly happy are these peacemakers. They'll be called God's children. They belong to God's family. Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Now, these folks who are persecuted just because they're Christians, it's always been that way. When I went to Italy, they dropped a bunch of us off at Naples, and we spent 6-8 weeks in that part of the country. The battle line had moved up north of Rome, and we had a few duties as we were waiting to be assigned to a company. But I went over one day to old Pompeii. Now, you've heard of it. It's down there in southern Italy. And it was covered up by Vesuvius and the volcanic ash in the first century. And it's had eruption since. It had an eruption in the spring before we were there. And there were still places where it was too hot to walk. But down near the foot of the mountain, there's this old city of Pompeii. The streets are in good condition still. You see, they were covered up all these hundreds of years with volcanic ash, and they were paved, cobblestones. And the thing that would amaze you would be the writing on the walls. Folks, you know, there are places around schools where folks like to write things. And there are some folks that like to write something on any fence or board they see. Well, folks were like that in the long ago. And you could still see these inscriptions. One of the ones that you might be interested in was Gaude in Ignio Christiane. Now, this has got to be during the time of the apostles because of the date when this was covered up. What that Latin means is, rejoice in the fire, O Christian. Somebody that didn't like Christians was just saying, well, I hope you have a good time when we roast you. Now, Jesus is here saying something else. Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven. 2 Timothy 3:12 says, all that will live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution. And I may have said it too many times, but I think the way to put it in our generation is that our Christian brothers in Russia and China probably understand this better than we do. This thing of being persecuted for righteousness' sake. And then he says, blessed are ye when men shall revile you, persecute you, say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Blessed are you. You'll find real happiness in this. Now, it doesn't seem logical, and it doesn't sound right to us at first, but the simple fact of the matter is, this is the way it works. The folks who are persecuted for righteousness' sake in the first century or in the 20th are the happy Christians. And Jesus just says, this is real happiness. Incidentally, out of the persecution of the church, God brings so many blessings to his people. The growth of the church in communist China in the last 10 years, that kind of thing. You know, there was in the early church after the apostles, down in North Africa, a lawyer, Christian lawyer, named Tertullian. Tertullian was the man that coined the word Trinity. Oh, the doctrine of the Trinity is all through the New Testament. No question about that. But the word Trinity comes from Tertullian. Now, this man said the blood of the martyrs became the seed of the church. There was another one of his sayings that's stayed with us. And Jesus is saying to these disciples now, and incidentally, these 12 to whom he were talking faced all of these things. All of them were martyred except possibly the Apostle John. You're not sure about him. But Jesus says, rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven. So persecuted they the prophets which were before you. Here's the introduction to the Sermon on the Mount, the way to find real happiness. Then Jesus talks to these disciples about what they're to do and be. He says, ye are the salt of the earth. If the salt has lost its savor, its taste, its strength, wherewith shall it be salted? What can you salt with salt that's lost its flavor? It's thenceforth good for nothing but to be cast out and to be trodden under foot of men. I think that means you throw it out in the road. You don't want to throw it on the garden. It won't be good for the garden or the field. And so they didn't have paved roads, and if they had salt that had lost its taste, they just threw it out. Now Jesus says you Christians are to be the salt of the earth. Salt gives flavor, not just to meat, but to other foods. Salt keeps things from spoiling. These people didn't have deep freezers and refrigerators. They didn't have our canning procedures. The only way they could preserve meat was to salt it. And there used to be much more of that in this country than now. I'm thinking of 60 years ago, it was a fairly common thing for the farmer to salt his meat. Take a couple hundred pounds of salt and just cover up the meat. Then put in another layer of meat and another layer of salt. And then sometimes after 6 weeks he'd get it out and smoke it. And he wanted it to be smoked with hickory wood, not any other kind. And then it would keep, and you never heard of any of it spoiling. Well, salt gives flavor, and salt preserves. And Jesus says, you are the salt of the earth. But if you lose your flavor, your taste, then what's it good for? Nothing but to be thrown out. All right, the Christians are to be like salt. And then he says, you are the light of the world. In other words, Christ is the light of the world. And then we're going to be told the Christian is also light. He's light in the sense that he's to reflect the true light that's in Christ. And he says, a city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Now, sometimes we can see cities at night, but in that part of the world, I never did get to North Africa, but we sailed right along the coast of North Africa, and it's just as clear in Italy. Over there where they build most of the buildings out of light-colored stone, if the sun is shining, the whole city is visible for miles. In a way, the American city is not. And this says a city is set on a hill. You can't hide it. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a basket, under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it gives light to all that are in the house. Now, these Christians who are to be light, let your light so shine before men, that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. The Christian's testimony of life. And Jesus said, we are to show forth the light that comes from God. Now, here's a section that gives us Jesus' attitude toward the Old Testament, or the law. Think not that I am come to destroy the law of the prophets. Jesus didn't come to set aside Moses. I'm not come to destroy, but to fulfill. And then he says it over again in a different way. Verily I say unto you, till heaven and earth pass, one jot or one tittle shall in no wise pass from the law until all be fulfilled. Now the jot and the tittle, that's Hebrew. the jot or the yacht is the I, the smallest letter in the Hebrew alphabet. It's really about the shape of an apostrophe, just a little bitty thing. And then the tittle is sort of a little tail on one of the letters to distinguish it from another. You know, when we print capitals in English, the capital G looks very much like the capital C, except for one little line in the middle. All right, now that's the kind of thing here. We'd probably say a dot on an I or a cross on a T. And Jesus is saying not the smallest part of the law is going to pass away till all be fulfilled. And again, you'll have parallels, but here's Jesus' attitude toward the Old Testament, that it is to be fulfilled in completeness. And he says, whosoever therefore shall break one of these least commandments and teach men so, lead them astray, he'll be called least in the kingdom of heaven. Whosoever shall do and teach them shall be called great. And then he says to these disciples, Peter, Andrew, James, and John, and that crowd, except your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, you shall in no case, in no wise, enter into the kingdom of heaven. I take it what Jesus is saying, that the religion of the real Christian must not simply be something outward, something ceremonial. These Pharisees and scribes were so concerned about the outward and what folks could see. Well, he's not saying that things like that don't matter. What folks see does matter. And there's a place for the outward. And there's a place in the Christian church for the ceremonies, the sacraments, and things like that. Yes, but if your heart isn't in it, then it's not real. And Jesus said to his disciples, you've got to have more than just the outward kind of religion that's practiced by the scribes and Pharisees. He says, unless you do, you won't enter into the kingdom of heaven. And then Jesus is going to go on with his teaching. The thought, I think, is connected. He says, you've heard that it was said by those of old time, thou shalt not kill, in the 20th chapter of Exodus and in Deuteronomy. And whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of judgment. That was the teaching in Deuteronomy, that murder was so serious that you were in danger of judgment. Now, says Jesus, I say unto you, whoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of judgment. In other words, Jesus is going to say these commandments include motives. Anger, which leads to murder, is the breaking of this commandment. And whoever shall say to his brother, raca, a word of contempt, which means you dummy, you empty head, you ignoramus. And then it more literally means I spit on you. In other words, contempt of a fellow human being is like anger, a breaking of this commandment. And then he says, whosoever shall say, thou fool, shall be in danger of hell fire. In other words, Jesus wants us to get to the motives as well as the outward things. And so he says in verse 23, if you bring your gift to the altar, and there remember that thy brother hath aught against thee, that your neighbor has a grievance against you, just leave your gift there before the altar. Go thy way, be reconciled to thy brother. Come to terms with your brother, and then come and offer your gift. And in verse 25, agree with thine adversary quickly while thou art in the way with him. Back in those days, there was a sense in which everybody was his own sheriff. You could go to somebody and say, hey, you come on, go up, see the judge with me. And you had to go. Now, said Jesus, while you are on the road, you make peace with this adversary, lest he delivers you to the judge, and the judge gives you to the policeman, and you be thrown into jail, into prison. And he says you won't get out until you've paid the last of the fine, the uttermost farthing. In other words, go out of your way to avoid legal procedures. Go out of your way to make peace with people and to keep peace. Now, speaking of motives, we're going to have the same thing over about the seventh commandment. You've heard that it was said by them of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery. And Jesus says, but I say unto you, whoever looks on a woman with impure intentions to lust after her has committed adultery with her already in his heart. Here's the idea that motives are included in these commandments. Just like hatred breaks the commandment, thou shalt not kill. Now, says Jesus, if there's something that's making you stumble, get rid of it. If thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee. It's profitable, it's better for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. You've had a few folks in history who've taken that kind of thing literally and cut off their hands and so on. But if this man is determined to see the wrong thing, just pulling out his right eye won't help. He'd just look at it with his left. What Jesus is saying, I'm sure, is that if there's something between you and God, get rid of it. If there's something that's causing you to offend, to stumble, to break these commandments, get rid of it. And if your right hand offends, you cut it off. And I've already mentioned that. Jesus, again, is talking about motives. Motives are important because they influence our conduct. And Jesus, I take it, is very definitely teaching us to think of motives along with the Ten Commandments. Our motives can be changed by the work of God's Spirit. And may it be true in your life and in mine that our motives are purified by the work of the indwelling Spirit of God.